and in the Character Creation Forge.
It's straight Xanathar's, baby.
Yeah, just kidding.
But the week after that, we're totally doing a bunch of Xanathar stuff.
Right. Live from the Mundangerous Good Ending in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 121 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about the sessions that happen after the campaign officially ends. But first, the Rogue Traders, in an attempt to end their own campaign early, charge a demon in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign. And later, the Last Man Standing refuses to go down, even with a fight, in the Character Creation Forge.
So just a reminder, we are looking for your happy RPG stories in contrast to your horror stories. So if you've had a triumph or an exciting moment or a favorite session, please send us a note and describe it for us so that we can read it on the air.
Yeah, dig deep for those because they're few and far between, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. Also, head on over to our Patreon page to take a look at the newly unveiled Character Creation Forge Codex. It exists. It's a real thing. You're welcome, I guess. I mean, thank you. Thank you, actually, is what we mean.
Yeah, actually, thank you to our Patreon backers who made this possible. Without the patrons, this would not have been done. We took their monthly contributions and we paid somebody to do it.
Yeah, this isn't one of those like, you know, it just really made us feel good that you support. No, it was you gave us money and we gave that money away and now this exists.
Right, yeah. It is a Google Doc, Google Sheets, I guess, spreadsheet that kind of has a line item for every single Character Creation Forge build we've ever made, with a description as well as what classes were involved in it. You can search it, you can filter it, you can do all sorts of things to cut up and carve the data. Found out we're only missing one class.
Oh, great. Which one?
Death Cleric. Which is
but that's DMG, yeah.
Not Adventures League legal, so
right,
we're good.
So we've always ignored it.
Yeah, so Xanathar's Guide is coming at the perfect time.
We have a bunch of builds that we've been wanting to put together, but we've been holding back for Xanathar's to see if there's a better fit.
Right.
Shane, who put it together for us?
That would be Jeff from the System Mastery Podcast. He had some time on his hands and was willing to help us out.
You know, I think anyone who listens to both podcasts will understand what I mean when I say, I think you're the Jeff of this show.
Oh, thanks.
And I am happily the John of this show. They don't know who we are, but it's fine.
Great. So Jeff suffered through, like, I think 90-ish Character Creation Forges that he listened to over the course of compiling.
That's more than most of our listeners.
Yeah, yeah. So he said some of them were doable from the notes, but some of them he just had to listen to. And I was like, I am so sorry.
Yeah, he was kind and didn't say, yeah, and a lot of them didn't have notes.
Right.
So I had to listen.
So that is available. The link is on Patreon, so check that out.
We've gone through, we've tried to put in leveling guides for all of the builds, even ones that we didn't have leveling guides for in the actual show. But if you happen to notice like any errors or something that just doesn't seem clear, just let us know and we'll tweak it on our end. Speaking of tweaking things that really should be left alone, Shane, where are we in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign?
So the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader game played using Dark Heresy 2nd Edition rules by Fantasy Flight Games. And the crew of the His Enduring Light have rescued the Chartist vessel Ambition from a warp reef, towed it into real space, and are in the process of boarding it while dealing with the psychic phenomena from the afterwash of the warp.
Well, you say rescued. Really, we have pulled them out of the warp and it totally remains to be seen whether any of the crew is going to make it out alive, or really whether any of our crew is going to make it out alive.
Correct. Perhaps that is a bit premature.
Because the only way to get to the bridge is to land several hundred of our own armsmen in the hangar bay, which is, what, a solid kilometer away from the bridge?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then make our way through warp-infested hallways.
Yes.
And stairwells.
Yes.
to get to the bridge, and the armsmen do not like this.
No, there are lots of sort of psychic phenomenon that are playing on their nerves, and it all comes to a head in the central corridor stairwell, which will lead you to the bridge. But first, you must traverse about 30 decks, and while you're going up, sort of the column is stretched out, a fight breaks out amongst the men. And people are on edge, and discipline is waning, and your character, Trank, really dealt with it in a great way. He shot one of them.
Yeah, obviously, it's discipline.
Right.
I'm learning from our Dark Eldar Bosun.
Right, which, you know, in the Imperial Guard, sure. In a group of armsmen under a lot of psychic stress, not so good. All hell breaks loose.
Well, I got a lot of bullets.
So the rest of the party is trying to calm you down, and then Draco's trying to reform the men and restore order. The sergeants are barking at everybody. It is total chaos in here, and it's kind of an embarrassment. It's a low point for your crew.
Yeah, I remember Doc was like, "All right, I'm going to give Trank a sedative," and I was like, "No, I'm a drug addict.
Yeah,
I refuse." And I think I was about to shoot Doc.
So I think that turned your attention away from shooting the men, though, which is probably good overall.
Yeah, we have a limited supply of those.
So you do eventually reform them and continue up the stairwell. And the top of the column finally reaches the deck with the bridge and breaches the door. So the ship was on lockdown before you towed it. So you're mostly having to like just blow doors open and see what's on the other side. And they're greeted by this very stiff, cold wind that just seems to be flowing into the stairwell, but not going anywhere. And yeah, it's never ending.
Makes perfect sense in a climate-controlled spaceship.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Not only is there an icy cold wind, there's also Laz fire.
Yeah.
And auto guns.
And auto guns. They meet somewhat determined resistance. And as that sound kind of echoes down the stairwell, word is passed down the line. Everyone meets a slightly less organized resistance as various doors are breached from the outside in, and cultists that have been tainted by the warp begin attacking your troops. And they're mostly using like improvised weapons. They're not exactly trained, and they're not like a dug-in force, but they're maddened by chaos. So.
Yeah, they're essentially rage zombies.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of these are obviously, they used to just be like workers or like the cleaning crew.
Right, exactly. And they're attacking with like a spanner or, you know, a sharpened broom handle, that kind of thing. Which kind of leads Trix into a situation, would you say?
Trix has a habit of leaning himself into a situation, but he basically realizes that their crappy weapons can't make it through his heavy armor. He basically shouts, "I'm invincible!"
Uh-huh.
And then charges.
Yep.
As he is wont to do.
And after clearing, you know, several decks of these cultists, right, saving the men, looking like a big hero, he turns a corner into a blood-curdling roar, and charges directly into a corn bloodletter. And how would you describe a bloodletter, Ishin?
All right, think of like a D&D Goristro. Like it's an 11-foot tall red demon with sharp pointy teeth, big horns, and its hands are just like scythe blades.
Yeah, yeah. I guess they move on all fours probably. But
I think they also have like some immunity to like psyker bullshit.
Well, they're corn. They're corn, so they don't like psychers.
Well, don't worry. Trix is not a psyker. However, he is meat.
Right. And he's like, "I charge it." So he did. And actually, Trix sort of impressed in his waning moments there. He did actually strike a pretty good blow against them, almost severed one of their legs.
Yeah, it was a solid. It was a solid multiple hits.
Right. Unfortunately for him, he charged a melee demon, and the melee demon fought back.
Yeah. Trix is smart. He has a refractor field, like a personal force field. That blocked the first hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Shattered. And then his armor blocked the second hit. And then shattered. And then his belly blocked the third hit.
Blocked. Yeah, that's the word for it.
And by the end of it, he had been torn open tail to tip.
And that was the end of Trix. Or was it?
Unfortunately, it was also the end of many of the witnesses. Draco fainted, just flat out fainted. Even some of the cultists collapsed into like uncontrollable fits, like having seizures from what they've seen. Like, this is a gruesome scene, right?
Yeah. And while we play these characters as very like, you know, go screw every man for themselves, like in practice, we all tend to look out for each other, but we all looked at what was left of Trix and said, nope, never mind.
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe we can get Draco out of here.
Right. Let's try to drag him out. However, unfortunately, then I rolled poorly. Trank suffers a mental breakdown and then just starts shooting his pulse rifle at anything that's moving, which, you know, includes the bloodletter, but also includes the men.
Right.
This is now the second time I've shot the men.
Yes. Your second mental break in 20 minutes or so. You're really not cut out for this line of work.
No, yeah, fighting demons, no, no. Right. Trank has absolutely decided he hates fighting demons.
Right. So you end up fumbling through one of the breaches into another chamber, being able to kind of trap the bloodletters in there, and you basically wait for their connection to the warp to falter. They have a warp instability, and they ultimately sort of are sucked back into the warp for not having caused enough chaos, but you kind of just have to wait them out.
Yeah, they need to shed blood in order to maintain their ties in real space, so we shut a big door, a big metal door between us and them, and then waited for a few minutes while as the screams of the dying echoed.
Yeah.
But once those ended and we waited a little longer, there's like a and we assumed they were gone.
Right. So you get your sit rep and the column is in tatters, right? You've been hit at, you know, throughout the column by a combination of dug-in defenders and just warp mad cultists. And these demons have obviously wrecked the center of it. And Draco makes a call. He's like, we have to keep on going to the bridge, but we're in no fighting shape. So if you're in the lower half of the stairwell, retreat back to the hangar and just make sure that no demons take the hangar bay.
Yeah. Just, if any show up, just kill them.
Right. Or run. One or the other. The rest of you, though, you're moving on to the bridge.
Right. The, like, 60-odd men we still have left with us.
Yeah, it's almost like I had to whittle down your number.
Huh. One company. Company 6, perhaps?
Yeah.
And we'll find out what they find there next week.
So this week, we are talking about epilogues, the sort of end of your campaign after it's already ended.
Yeah, the end, the denouement.
Yeah, thanks for narrowing it down with French.
It's like a session, or, you know, maybe even multiple sessions that happen after the climax of the campaign. And it's where we find out the consequences of the story that we've all just spent, you know, maybe years telling together. And what happens to those characters once the big mission is over.
Yeah, it's like a coda.
Yeah, so we see this happen a lot in, you know, like a TV series. You know, the last maybe one or two episodes is sort of wrapping up the entire thing. You get them in books a lot, obviously. But in an RPG, what is the benefit of potentially spending an extra entire session on wrapping up a campaign even after the mission is accomplished or, you know, completely failed?
So it gives you a chance to sort of explore the impact of what you've done. Right. And you could do this kind of in a few minutes or a few scenes at the end of the last session. But if you give yourself more time to kind of mull it over and think about it and process what happens at the end of your campaign, you know, you can kind of give it a fuller treatment.
Yeah, I think anyone who's run a full campaign knows that you've got all these ideas about how this is going to end and what is the big final battle going to be, right? It's almost always a big final battle.
Right.
But those always take way longer than you anticipate that they're going to take. And so even though you might be like, all right, big battle, and then we're going to have some awesome cutscenes, you'll see what happens. By the time it's like 1:30 in the morning and everyone has been like, well, tomorrow I'm just going to be a wreck, but we're finishing the campaign, so I'm going to stick it out. Once the final enemy falls, everyone kind of wraps it up and says, hey, that was awesome. You don't really have time for the you know, intimate detail of what you might actually have in like a longer written story.
And then in terms of that detail, right, it's a chance to give meaning to what happened. So this applies especially if you had characters who died along the way, either earlier on or especially in that final battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, particularly for people who die in that climax, it's an opportunity for their player to see what their character died for, right? Aside from, okay, we won this particular battle, how do things in the world at large get better because of that sacrifice? Or, you know, how does it get worse because you screwed up and died?
Right. Or on a smaller scale, like, what is the legacy that they leave behind?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Are they remembered? Are they, you know, deified? Are they canonized? Those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because they're not going to have what other characters in the party might have, like tales of growing old or like, I'm going to tell you about my grandchildren. So the epilogue is really all of the story that they're going to get. Plus, also, funerals are fun.
Yeah, especially if you get a statue out of it.
I am a huge fan of players giving the eulogy at the funeral of a fallen comrade. Opportunities for, you know, heartfelt anguish and also, you know, just one last roast.
Yeah, here lies Trix. He was an asshole, but he was our asshole. And we always appreciated that about him.
So did the bloodletter.
Right.
It's also a chance for everyone in the party to wrap up the long campaign with attention to those little details that might have been missed in all the excitement of, you know, saving the city. So, you know, maybe one of your characters actually did, 3/4 of the way through this huge quest, find the antidote to that spell of living stone that was cast on their family.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't really have any time to, like, go to your village on the other side of the world because you were on the clock.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens a lot. You have these plot threads that are, you know, probably going to be wrapped up, but sort of left dangling in the main campaign fiction because time, right? Like, something urgent happened. The major threat was resolved, but we never went back to that smaller plot thread.
Mm-hmm. So it would be nice for the entire party to sort of like get on a ship, sail to another continent with one of their companions and like present the antidote to the village elders and sort of act that out and see what kind of message a grateful family has.
Yeah, this can turn into sort of miniature adventures, sort of vignettes almost. Where the stakes are lower but could still be high. You know, things where you've got sort of a discrete challenge that you're equipped to deal with, but maybe you have to worry more about consequences now, or you have a reputation now, or you have something to protect.
Yeah, we'll talk about this a bit more later, but you think about one of the epilogues in The Lord of the Rings is the Scouring of the Shire, where, okay, the ring of power is destroyed and like Sauron's not going to take over the world, but the hobbits still need to go back and handle the crap that's happening back home because bad things are happening.
Yeah. It also gives you a chance to explore how relationships between PCs or between PCs and NPCs have changed.
Yeah, this is the time usually when you find out if the romance actually pans out.
Yeah, the meet cute was worth it.
Especially if it's between a PC and an NPC.
Yep.
Like in the party, that can happen, you know, while you're about to open the door for the final battle. You
right.
know, hey, I really like you. I don't know if you knew that. But, you know, if it's someone who's like back in the village or like it's the high priest, like you need time to go back and actually express your feelings.
Yeah, it's also, you can explore, you know, themes of forgiveness, right? Kind of burying the hatchet or redemption arcs as well, if the final battle was your redemption.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about how the quest itself, the campaign itself, could, the motivation for an individual PC could be like they have to go do it. They're ordered to go do it, or, you know, they're making up for something in their backstory. So it's nice to be able to actually see, you know, what happens. What is the absolution like? What is the ceremony like where they're actually restored to their order?
Yeah, for those characters too, where they're sort of like single-minded in their pursuit, right? You get a chance to explore that PC after, you know, it's like, okay, so you've saved the world. You've become the, you know, the paragon of your deity, Mr. Paladin. Now what do you do on Sunday morning? I guess I'll sleep in.
I earned it.
I guess I'll get breakfast.
I never thought about what I like for breakfast.
This can also be a an opportunity to explore a character who has fallen from grace over the course of the final battle. Mm. That was definitely a theme of the Morning Glory campaign, as Bastion chose to betray the party in our final battle.
Or even the character who, for the greater good, has walked a dark path. You know, not maybe fully to the extent of Bastion and like becoming an adversary.
Yeah.
But, you know, the character who became a warlock and sold their soul for power in order to save the world.
Yeah.
Now the bill comes due.
Yeah, I love that exact example, right, is Eisenhorn in the Inquisitor series by Dan Abnett. Like, his epilogue really is a brief cameo he has in the like spin-off series Ravenor, when he like sets a meeting with Ravenor just to give him like a little bit of advice, and you see like the toll that his deal with a demon has taken on him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, binding the demon host has corrupted him, and he's still trying to fight the good fight, but like it is seriously costing him.
Yeah, I love the idea that, you know, the final enemy finally falls, and then out of a portal from hell steps a devil who says, well, now that you stopped all of space and time from unraveling, turns out it's been 7 years since we made that deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for saving my ass. Now you're mine.
Right.
It's a win-win. And individual backstories or even the stories of individual PCs aside, it is an opportunity for your party to see the consequences of their success or, you know, their failure or some combination of the two. You know, what does Thrain actually look like now that Brand has had a hand in extinguishing the Silver Flame?
Mm-hmm.
It looks pretty bad, actually.
It looks great. What are you talking about?
My face is on the money.
Yeah, I made it my own image.
Did you? We haven't had that epilogue yet.
Rockstar Inquisitor. Or Inquisitor Rockstar.
Did you take expertise in performance?
No.
What? No. Maybe retraining. Retraining.
Right, yeah. Okay, so when planning your epilogue, what are some elements to include? Like, what are the things you want to consider? What are the building blocks of an epilogue?
It's usually onions, carrots, and celery.
That sounds incredibly bland.
What? That is the center of any good soup. It's the flavor profile. I guess also butter.
Yeah. You missed one. It's the good one.
Salt. Right. Salt and fat. It's loose ends. Loose ends make up the bulk of the items that you want to include in your epilogue. So while you're playing your campaign, whether you're the GM or player, keep track of whatever unfinished quests are still lingering as the campaign is progressing. What is it that nags your players or sort of nags you? What was never wrapped up in a nice tidy bow?
Yeah, and oftentimes this will result in multiple loose ends for each character, right? Because they've all sort of had things they were interested in at one point, but then kind of dropped the thread, and now they've got the rest of their lives to sort of address those things. So I think a montage is a great way of dealing with these.
Yeah, you sort of bounce back and forth. And, you know, if you're lucky, there is something that most of the group or even all of the group really wants to go back and finish. They just didn't have time in game to do it. So, you know, then you sort of spin that off into in a little mini adventure. You also want to include anything that the players bring up. Like if they mention, oh, whatever happened with that, right? Which is why it's sometimes nice to have a bit of a break between the end of the campaign and your epilogue, whether that's a week or, you know, 6 months or 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You have the opportunity for players to be like, yeah, you know, I always was thinking about this thing. So it's good to put that in, but it's also nice to throw in a surprise, like something that they thought was totally wrapped up, and maybe there's just like one thing that they forgot about.
Yeah, that dangling prophecy.
The dangling participle in the prophecy.
Right.
Turns out.
And then the other thing is just, you know, what are the questions that the players still have about the campaign? What are the sort of nagging things that, as an audience, they didn't quite follow? You can address those in the epilogue as well. Sort of the grand explainer, if you will, where you finally, like, the heist is over and you sort of peel back the layers so you can see all the little mechanisms that drove the behavior the way it went.
Right, like everyone gets to hear the voice of the omnipotent narrator.
Right.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
In any epilogue, you are going to want to have a healthy dose of consequences. Because the real reason that people are paying attention to what happened after all of the excitement is to see the effect that they had on this campaign world that you've all created together. So, even if you've wrapped up all your loose ends, or even after that's all done, what does the city or the country or the world look like now due to your PC's actions?
Yeah, if you've wiped off every goblin and orc from the face of the planet, what do all those militias do now?
Yeah, I think a lot of pre-written adventure paths will have like one tiny sidebar that's like one quarter of a page at the end. Where they're like, okay, you've won. You defeated Tiamat. What does the world look like now that greed does not have a deity?
Right.
Think about that. But that's something that has massive repercussions for a game world.
Right.
You're going to want to go macro and micro for those kinds of repercussions. Now the pantheon has changed. That obviously has very obvious consequences in that, some temples are now in ruin or someone else has moved in to take over that part of the portfolio. But you want to also express them on the micro level. What does that look like to the child in an individual village growing up?
Or to the priest whose deity died in the process.
Right. Maybe it was a good deity who sacrificed themselves. What do all those clergy do now who were good people, who were faithful people? And yeah, it was worth it because the world still exists, but I don't know, what do you do now?
Right. And then from a storytelling perspective, I think you want to tell this from the standpoint of the NPCs they already have an attachment to.
Mm.
So rather than just trying to build a rapport with, nameless child in village number three, right? It's the child that they saved from the bugbear, right? Or whatever. Like, how is that child's life different versus some anonymous one?
Yeah, I like that much better than sort of the voiceover narration of here is how things got different.
Yeah.
although that can work if the PC's lost. It's a gloating narration by the BBEG being like, here's how the world sucks now.
Right.
Thank you very much.
If your players are up for it, you can just give them the voice of the BBEG too. Unwind everything you built.
Tell me how it's awful. How did you fail? And not just specific NPCs, but also specific locations, places that your party visited, cities that were important to them, clan households, or their stronghold, that they've spent all this time building up. What does it look like now? Is it amazing? Does it become permanent?
Yep. And then also, you want some of these to be both kind of expected consequences and then unforeseen consequences, right? Those ripple effects. And those unforeseen consequences can be, of course, both good and bad.
Yeah, sometimes it'll be unexpected, but hey, that's a windfall. I didn't expect that, like, the goblins would rout and run back to the mountains.
Right.
But awesome.
Yep. Also, think about what happens to the magic items that are involved. A lot of times the MacGuffins are, like, these super powerful artifacts that the PCs get to wield, but then there's six of them. And that's a really powerful artifact. What do they do with it?
Well, if you're smart, you'll just make sure it's destroyed in the process of saving the world, right?
Ideally.
But sometimes you don't have that option. Like, for example, you borrowed Minerva's shield to go kill Medusa, but she probably wants her shield back.
Yeah.
Hermes wants his sandals.
Right.
So in those instances, it's pretty obvious what you need to go do with them. You need to return them. But that is a nice opportunity for roleplay. Like, okay, we'll go to Olympus and we'll meet the gods on a more equal footing than we did 15 levels ago.
Right.
And then, you know, we'll hand back their things and it'll be an interesting ceremony.
There's also a well-worn trope of probably the reason you you had trouble in the first place. After you use it, you hide it.
Yeah.
Right? So that no one can ever find it again, you know, until the next crisis in which they have to retrace your steps to find it.
Right. And it's that it's a fun puzzle for a lot of players to be like, okay, where was this hidden before? Obviously, we were able to retrieve it, so that's dumb.
Yeah, and this doesn't just apply to items. This also applies to bodies. You don't want anybody resurrecting that dead lich or Bastion.
There's no body for Bastion, so I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know where you're going to hide it.
He had no soul.
You proved he did.
Oh, did I?
No, Kallak did, because he murdered him.
Things can be unproven. What if the universe made a mistake?
I like the puzzle of, okay, the lich did a bad job of hiding their phylactery because it only took us, you know, 1,500 years to find it. No mm-hmm. big deal. Mm-hmm. I, the player, am going to play a little thought experiment
yeah.
involving an anti-magic field, a bag of holding, a trip to the astral plane, and the inside of a slod. And I'm going to make sure no one finds this thing.
I'm going to use the prison spell. I'm going to turn him into a crystal of salt. I'm going to dissolve him in the ocean.
Of course, the best part of that is if you play another campaign and then some other group of PCs now has to go find it.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, I know exactly where it is, but there's literally no way to get it.
Yeah.
We have to, guys, sorry, we have to boil the ocean.
Yeah, exactly.
This happens in comic books a lot. Every time the Infinity Gauntlet gets brought together, spoilers for Avengers 3, I guess, you got to split it up again. Because you can't stay together because someone's going to use it to destroy the entire multiverse. So, like, get rid of the thing. Smash into little pieces and hide each one of those things.
So, you can also have that end of episode 4.
Yeah, moment. 4. Mm-hmm.
Yep, with a ceremony, right? What is the honor that's bestowed upon you? You know, is it a medal or a promotion?
Not if you're a Wookiee.
Right. Coronation.
Yeah, you're gonna get some stuff. Maybe it's time to get married.
Or get buried.
Yeah, yeah. Those often happen. Or maybe it's a retirement party. You know, if you've spent your entire adventuring career focused on revenge, maybe it's time to consider piracy.
Yeah. So you can have that ceremony where you're elected captain of a pirate crew.
Yeah, at Rapier Point.
Right. I mean, I'll fight anybody here who wants to. I'm just saying, I just wrecked the world, so.
We took in a new crew. This guy just starts calling me Roberts.
Right.
Everyone goes along with it.
Of course, for the greedier players amongst us, you'll want to know what your just rewards were.
Yeah, I want a castle. Well, I want a flying castle.
Oh, I want power. I want the title.
So that you can gift yourself a flying castle?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, so that yeah. I can, you know, seize the flying castle.
Look, if I have a flying castle, I'm pretty sure I can take over countries and make my own titles.
Yeah, but if my title is King of Flying Castles, I just lay claim to yours.
Okay, sounds like a sequel.
Of course, rewards can be much smaller as well, right? You might have elements of your backstory. So you could earn the freedom for your family, for example, or restore the honor to your clan for a dwarf.
Yeah. And, you know, how did those parents who were really disappointed in you for, you know, going off adventuring and not staying home and sticking to the family business, how do they feel now that you've restored your clan's honor? Huh? Huh, mom and dad?
Yeah, they feel like you better get to sweeping that floor, boy.
Yeah, nothing changes. Everything changes and nothing changes. Since I have a flying castle, though, I just have like this trap door and I sweep everything down the drain.
A moon door.
Yeah. And then it's not my problem anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to sweep the king of this castle right down the drain, too.
Waiting till we're over an ocean.
Right.
All right, so now you know what you're going to put in your epilogue. But there are a few different ways to play this out. There is, of course, the direct aftermath. So if you're lucky and you've got extra time in your session, you know, you spend half the session finding out what happened. What are the immediate consequences of the end of the story? Or, you know, a session later, it's like, all right, we're doing session 104.5.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like the dust has literally just settled. There's also the reunion, right? So perhaps you made an agreement or there's been some outside impetus for the band to get back together.
Yeah, it's quite possible that the reason the Morning Glory campaign comes back together is that it's been a year and a day since they banished Nishtam Shadar, and, well, that guy needs to get dead again.
Right. There's also, you know, the oldest, shortest-lived member of the party has died, mm-hmm. and they've all kind of reunited to pay their respects.
I really like using the reunion trope when the gaming group itself hasn't played together in a long time.
Yeah.
So it mirrors the... It's very meta.
Yeah.
That's all come together. And we'll play those characters that we played 15 years ago because we all just happen to be back in town.
Yeah. I think that was one of the horror stories that got sent in for our Halloween episode. And I love that concept of an adventure, of a game. But obviously didn't turn out so great for them for unrelated reasons to the structure.
You mentioned this a little bit before, but certain types of groups are interested in the more mundane aspects of the epilogue. You know, adventurers out of water, right? You spent many, many sessions like fighting for your lives and trying to save us, an entire city. So what is it like now when you're living this normal life and, you know, you wake up in the morning and the first thing you put on is like a tunic and not armor?
Right.
You sleep in a bed.
You sleep in a bed, yeah.
That's weird.
The same bed, like multiple days in a row.
That's right. What spells am I preparing? Plant growth?
Right.
Create food and water?
You can also have sort of a Brave New World kind of epilogue where you're dealing with the consequences of a world that is significantly different than it was before the climax. So either consequences of failure or kind of a success with a cost kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, you're maimed, you know, or you've had to give up something, you know, in order to succeed. Or you failed, but the world didn't end. The right. world is just worse.
Right. You know, this is to track sort of a modern epilogue. This is like living in Japan, like allied occupied Japan, right? The armistice was signed to end World War II. Japanese culture is intact, but there's no more standing army. And you've agreed that we'll never have another standing army.
So what do you do if you were in the army?
Right.
You can also, and this is sort of an even larger version of the mini adventure, is you can play it out sort of like we did in the 8-year time skip in Rogue Trader, which is you kind of have random events and find out what happens in the future.
Yeah, I love this as an idea for almost like 100 Ways to Die.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you're not necessarily playing out all of the years in between, but you're playing out your character's final scene and you're piecing together, well, how did I end up in this, you know, like trapped in the elemental plane of fire? Like what series of events could have led me there?
Yeah, or you know, the flip side of that is, how is it possible that I like died 80 years later peacefully in my bed?
Right, exactly.
How did nobody get me?
Right.
And that is another avenue for telling these epilogues is, you know, find out how it is that everyone dies. It's a very almost like medieval way of telling a story.
It's kind of macabre, yeah.
But if you think about even Lord of the Rings does the same thing, right? Like Tolkien has an epilogue and it's 160 years later, Aragorn dies of old age and Arwen throws herself on the casket and dies of grief. And Why is that information in there?
Spoiler.
sorry. Like, well, why is that like depressing information in there? It's because like that's how those stories were written. We know that like Bilbo and Frodo go off to like the Blessed Realm and then die there, and then Legolas does too, and he takes Gimli with it. Like we know the eventual ends of their stories, even though that's like 100 years after the story ends.
Yes. Yep. And of course, none of this has any meaning if it doesn't matter to the players. So you should also kind of work with the players to figure out what is it that they want to get out of the ending. Like, what's the epilogue they're looking for? Do they care how their characters die? Do they care how their characters deal with the immediate impact?
Yeah, and players, be vocal about this. Like, if if you know that an epilogue is coming, if the campaign ends and are like, all right, next week we're doing an epilogue, be proactive about telling your GM what it is you want to see out of that. I mean, sometimes it can be, all right, I'm going to write an epilogue for my character, right? Like, I'm going to send you a little short story just like I did with the backstory. Mm-hmm. And like, maybe that's totally fine. But just have an idea in your head of what you want to get out of this so that it's a satisfactory ending for you.
Right.
Because this is an opportunity for you to shape the end of that story. So GMs, give your players a ton of leeway here. Obviously, you know, you want to do the normal social contract stuff where you don't have people stepping on other people's toes and they're not telling other people how their stories end, right? But in general, like, if it makes even the slightest bit of sense that, you know, the thief becomes like a wealthy king because of inheritance, like, just go for it. Why not?
Well, you're not called a robber baron for nothing.
I kept these artifacts for a little longer than maybe I should have before giving them back. And think about, as a player, are you the same person as the one who was in your backstory like 20 levels ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, how does your character feel about who they are, given who they thought they would be at this moment?
Yeah, given the things that they had to do, do they feel like it was all worth it?
Right.
And if they do, what is it that they had to give up? And what unexpected things did they gain?
Yep. This is a great way to reckon with the blood on your hands or... you know, the sacrifices that you've made along the way, the price you've paid to be successful in the final battle. Mm. This is kind of where that all comes due from an emotional standpoint.
This is also going to be the time when both players and GMs are setting up the vague, faint possibility of the sequel.
Right.
There should always be something left undone that either your kids or some other adventuring party 1,000 years from now needs to do.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe not the sequel, maybe the reboot or the next generation.
Morning Glory, the next generation.
Oh,
I kind of like that. I kind of like that idea. It's like Legend of Korra. 70 years later, the whole world is different. Because you screwed it up.
Speaking of, doing an epilogue after a successful campaign is not without risks. So what are some of the pitfalls of attempting an epilogue?
I mean, a bad dessert ruins a great meal, right? So if it's done poorly, if you're not putting the same time and effort into prepping your epilogue as you were during your regular campaign, it can just spoil a great ending.
Yeah, you don't want your story to jump the shark mm-hmm. in its very final moments.
Right. You made it all this way, and then people are like, I think we're kind of done.
Yeah. I guess we're not going to call that canon, huh? Maybe in a few months we can take another crack at that.
Yeah, and be careful about like sort of pulling the rug out from under the tone that you set. If you ran such a serious, brooding, grimdark campaign, don't have like a slapstick epilogue with pratfalls.
Right, right. I think another potential pitfall is generally games do not have strong mechanical support for this type of storytelling. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in a D&D game, if you're telling the broad sweeping narration of maybe a character's last 20 years, a skill check doesn't really model that very effectively, right?
You rolled a one, the rest of your life sucked.
Yeah, exactly. So it can be very freeform, and it probably should be a little more freeform or looser in the mechanics, and you're giving more narrative control to the players. So if that's a departure from the regular campaign, that can be a challenge for players and GMs to manage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're playing a pretty crunchy system, I'd say go ahead and take a look at just some of the storytelling options in lighter systems.
Right.
And just use that for, you know, one or half a session.
Right. Or do what I do and just throw random tables together.
Everyone loves random tables. So we actually want to hear about your experiences with playing or running an epilogue for your campaign. You've told us a lot about you know, stories from your campaigns, but how did they end? And then, you know, what did you do to sort of send them off into the night for good?
And all the better if you can tie those into your gaming triumphs.
Yeah, we already skipped horror stories. Sorry.
Yeah. Maybe next Halloween. All right. Do you hear that, Ishan?
That is the sound of this chapter coming to a close, at least on this episode. I don't think we need to do an epilogue for this episode, I hope, because I don't have any notes.
Well, that's fine. We'll just move on to the next section in the bookshelf, the Character Creation Forge.
It does come next alphabetically.
It's got a codex. Before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrillCast.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Total Party Thrill.
So this week in the Character Creation Forge, we are building the last man standing.
When everyone else is down for the count, it's the last man standing who holds on until the bitter end. And, you know, sometimes even afterward. So this is a character who is just really impossible to kill.
Okay. How would you contrast this character with the Tub Thumper?
That was the one that kept the whole party alive. Well, not alive, but alive again.
Yeah.
the corpse reviver.
Okay. Okay, so the last man standing doesn't care about the rest of the party. He protects himself.
That's right. The last man standing does not have revivify.
Okay.
Or any healing.
Okay.
But the last man standing is, I'll go get help. I mean, I guess you could take the medicine skill.
Yeah.
Will not avenge you. They will make sure that you are remembered.
Right.
Fondly, probably.
All right. So what is the build for the last man standing?
It is a half-orc, monk of the long death 15, bear totem barbarian 3, diviner wizard 2.
So I think we can start with these smaller classes first. So barbarian, I'm guessing we're doing this for the damage resistance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the tankiest character you can make is a bear totem barbarian. So you get a couple rages a day, which greatly extend your hit points and your toughness in battle. We don't get a ton else from barbarian that we really love. Reckless attack actually makes it easier for you to get hit, so you probably want to avoid that.
Then diviner wizard, we're getting this for portent, right?
Essentially, yeah.
It's going to be a little difficult to cast spells, but there's a chance you could use things like absorb elements to gain damage resistance or shield to avoid getting hit.
Yeah, and those are both great spells to use before you've had your first turn, so you haven't had a chance to rage yet.
Right. And then portent will let you have a little bit of control over a couple of die rolls each day so that you can avoid getting hit or make a save that's important, those types of things.
Yeah, when you absolutely, positively have to live... important.
And then Monk of the Long Death.
Yeah, this takes Bear Totem Barbarian up to 11, which I guess makes sense because it's the 11th level feature that we're really going for.
Right.
You get Extra Attack, Flurry, Stunning Fist, which are nice, but they use up your ki, which you kind of want to sandbag. Although, you know, sometimes the best defense is good offense. But speaking of defense, you also get evasion. So if you succeed on those dexterity saving throws, which you probably will...
You don't take damage.
That's right. You got deflect missiles. And if someone throws you out a window, you just slow fall down.
You also have immunity to poison and disease, so you will not be snookered by anybody trying to kill you.
You won't accidentally eat the wrong food and die, which is ridiculous. But those are the ways that you take out the tough characters.
Right.
Is the sneaky ways. And, of course, level 14, you're able to reroll your saving throws by popping a key. No action required.
You also don't require food and water, and you have no penalties from old age.
Which is also how they get you. They just wait till you're 85.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get a bit of temp HP when you're taking down a creature. But at the 11th level of Monk, you can spend a key point, no action required, to not die.
Which is, yeah, that's good.
Right. Well, you know, if you were reduced to 0 hit points, you can instead be reduced to 1 hit point, which is the typical way that you die.
Right.
The other way, of course, is failing a saving throw, which you're really not going to do.
Or taking massive damage, which would reduce you to negative your hit point total, in which case you'll die instantly.
Shield.
And then, of course, we're a half-orc, which means we'll have Relentless Endurance, which allows you to get back up once for free. It doesn't even require a key point.
Yeah. So even when they think they've totally run you out of them, and they have, you're still okay.
All right, Ishan. Who is your last man standing?
So my last man standing is someone who seeks to understand death. So began as a barbarian and deals it out, but then begins to have visions of their own death, the day that they die, and seeks to understand it, and so joins the way of the long death to ultimately sort of become one with death itself. Part of the inspiration for this is, I don't know, did you ever see that old 80s fantasy movie Krull, which was not particularly good?
No, but I've seen a reference to it.
Okay, good enough. There's a character in that. I think it's a Cyclops. And the special ability that the Cyclopses have in Krull is that they know when they're going to die.
Oh, that sucks.
Yes, it sucks. And they're all very morose because of it. But it's also cool because you can charge into battle knowing that, like, this is not my day.
Yeah, yeah.
So like that's how I would flavor the portent, in that I think they would be almost my character. She's essentially foolhardy. She's like, today's not the day I'm going to die, right? It's the opposite of the Klingon, like, today's a good day to die. No, today's a terrible day to die.
Which is why I'm not going to today.
Yeah, you're going to die. It's bad for you. But my day, not yet. When my day comes, that will be a bad day for me, but I'll be prepared.
I like the solipsism.
Well, you know, it was all your days, all right? It's the rogue's day to die, and the fighter's day to die, right, and the cleric's day to die, but it is not the monk's day to die. So you will be remembered somewhat fondly. What about your last man standing?
All right. Do you want to take a little trip with me? Because I'm going to go to a weird place.
I thought we were already there.
Okay. So my last man standing is not about being the last one standing in the party.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Mine is about finding out who's the last man standing within himself.
Oh, okay.
Because somewhere else. He is a rat king. He is a collection of animated rats psychically linked together who, as they fall, reform again to continue fighting forward.
Okay, I kind of like that you could do this with a swarm of cranium rats.
Yeah.
yeah, I'm into it.
You'll have to reflavor half-orc, obviously, quite heavily.
I think you could swap out those two levels of diviner and go two levels of druid and then turn yourself into a swarm of cranium rats.
You turn yourself back into a person.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. Of course.
It works in reverse.
Say, I am a swarm of cranium rats.
Right.
That's gross and disconcerting.
Thank you. So on that note,
if you want more,
yeah,
go to our Patreon page.
Yeah, and again, a thank you to our patrons for making the Character Creation Forge Codex possible. Thank you to Jeff from System Mastery for completing that for us. And check out the Patreon page at patreon.com/totalpartythrill for the link to it. Search it, find it. You will find the last man standing there.
That's right. Yeah, your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this every single week.
Against your better judgment, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair. I mean, this is either running the week before Thanksgiving or on Thanksgiving. So fun for the whole family.
Right.
Or get away from your family.
Right.
I'm doing work. No, it's work. Yeah. Listening to podcasts is for work.
All right. We also have a 5-star review from iTunes. This is a dynamic duo covering RPG topics in depth by iBlueWizard. 5 stars. The two hosts of the show are truly experts in their field, and that field is RPGs, with a focus on D&D 5e. I'm impressed every episode by what they cover in their discussions and their creations in the Character Creation Forge.
That's more often than I'm impressed
that
by
is,
us.
That is really stretching the term expert.
Yeah.
To
or,
its,
or impressed.
Or impressed, yeah.
Or every.
But we are fanboys, at least.
That's nice. We appreciate it. So if you'd like us to read your review, leave a good one.
Or at least a 5-star one. Yeah,
that's true. You could pay us, because that's a Patreon option, and leave a horrible review, and we'll still read it.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, because you paid us.
Right.
Yeah. So if you hate us, go for it.
Well, that's it for episode 121 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening. And a bottom 10 of other podcasters in the industry.
Yeah, great.
Our favorites and least favorites. You know who you are.
Let's burn our bridges.
Gotta build them first.
All right.
Thrillies are basically Razzies. Let's be honest.
Oh. Okay.
Do you like the new margins?
Oh, mm-hmm. Did you lower?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, mm-hmm. Nice. Very nice. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Loving it.
Looks like we have less work to do.
Right. And then I'll copy an old one like an idiot, and it'll all be lost to the sands of time.
Awesome.